Blog Talk Radio.
Come shine your light, open your heart, show us your gift that sets you apart. When you believe, then you can see that you are the star of your own destiny.
Hi, and welcome to the Honoring Hour. My name is Lynn, and I'm your host for the show. Today is June 15th, and I don't know where you are on the planet, but I am in Virginia, and I have to say that we are having some of the most incredibly gorgeous weather. I don't know that I could have asked for a more perfect day. I've spent the morning outside, and I'm ready to be in long enough to do the show, and I'm hoping to get on back outside, but just absolutely beautiful, a wonderful spring summer day, and I hope that you all are enjoying beautiful weather or a gorgeous day in any regards wherever you are also. Just wanted to give you guys a little bit of a heads up on some things that are going on here at the Honoring Hour. On the 29th, we're going to have Nancy Ubel. She was affiliated with the Association of Research and Enlightenment. She's going to be on here talking with us about her book, my mind just went completely blank. Mind Walking, I believe it is. I am so sorry to her, and I don't have the book laying right here. It's rewriting your past to create your future. So I apologize for not having that here. Obviously, I wasn't meant to know it in this moment, and things are just kind of going crazy today. So I'm just going to roll with that. On July 6th, Karen Wrigley and I are going to be doing another animal communication and channeled message, and we invite you all to join us, not only just to listen to the show, but to also ask questions and participate. It's really about calling in information that people are here at this time on the planet or listening to the radio show that are meant to hear. So the more participation we have, the better the messages are, so we're really hoping that you join us there. And I am really excited about today's show. I have to say that one of my favorite books is by this author. I have on the show today Betsy Otter Thompson, and she wrote the book Walking Through Illusion, which is one of my favorite books, and I have to say that her being on the show was one of my favorite shows as well. So I'd like to welcome to the show today Betsy. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you for such kind words. That's lovely, Lynn. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Oh, thanks for joining us. And I'm just going to say, just in case something goes a little crazy, if y'all can bear with us, my computer's doing some really strange things, and I do the show via my computer, so we're hoping that the show itself doesn't get interrupted, but just bear with me if I don't get to you in the chat room or if I can't answer your call right away if you're calling in. I'll do the best that I can. So, Betsy, we're actually here today to talk about your book, Love Parent, How to Be the Parent You Hope to Be. And you and I were just talking about, I personally had wished that this book was around when my son was born, and oddly enough, the book was originally published in the year he was born, and I did not find that. So I just wanted to finish that thought. I was saying that I bet he wished I had found it too, because I have to say that with this guidance, or with this reminder, I know that I could have been every bit as much of a parent as he needed me to be, or as I really wanted to be, because I truly did want to be the parent that this book talks about.
Now, let me just say one thing while we're on that subject, because I truly believe that when your son was contemplating his journey here and choosing his parents, and I believe that's what happens, he knew exactly how you thought about everything, how you felt about your life, how you felt about other people, how you made your decisions, everything. And that's the person that he wanted to come, that's the person he wanted to greet when he got here. For whatever reasons he had, for whatever challenges he had, he knew that was the wise choice for him. So don't ever think that things didn't happen exactly the way they were supposed to. You know, it may feel to you now that you wish you had these ideas, but maybe you wouldn't have been ready to receive them. You're more ready to receive them now, and your son wanted who you were. If he didn't want who you were, he would have come through somebody else.
And I do know that as well. Thank you for that reminder. And I have to say that reading this book, that was the only, I had to remind myself of that constantly, that he came at the time that he did, knowing who I was in that moment and knowing more than I did, I'm sure, of how I was going to raise him. So, you know, again, thank you for that. And I do know that there's other parents out there that probably need to hear that as well. So I just want to talk to you a little bit about how you started this book and you know, how it came about. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. In fact, I had just recently acknowledged the fact that I re-acknowledged the fact that I had this gift that it appeared when I was 5. And I had gotten to a point in my life where the blame I had been using for most of my life at that point hadn't worked very well since I was almost a bag lady. And I decided to start taking responsibility for my life and not blaming everyone else for where I was. And this was one thing that I took responsibility for, this gift that I had. And I was talking with a friend of mine, and she was having parenting issues. And I had had parenting issues, too, because I had had German measles when I was pregnant with my first son. And he was born with all kinds of physical problems. And I had any kind of, when that happens in a family, there's always dynamics that are playing out with other children. And I had a lot of questions, too. And so I asked Spirit, I said, this is a book that would probably help me and my friend and maybe a lot of other people. Will you help me? And, of course, Spirit joined in. And this is the book that resulted. And so that's how it happened in the very first book that I ever wrote.
Now, when you wrote this book, how old were your children?
When I wrote this book was in 19... Well, they were almost grown by the time I wrote this book.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't all adults yet, but they were much, you know, they were all here, all four of them. And I had a lot of traumas in my life where I had to deal with a lot of things that happened. I had been married twice and divorced twice. And also, you know, the very idea that we were talking about a minute ago, about the idea that of trusting that the child wants to come through you, because I certainly had that challenge with my firstborn. I felt guilty that I had that I was the one that had the German measles, and he was the one that got infected and had all the problems. But this book really helped me to realize that if his spirit had not wanted to come through me and have this challenge, it would have aborted. It wouldn't have gone to full term, because spirit is all-knowing. It comes from a place where it is part of the whole, so all the knowledge of the whole is within this energy. And so if he came through me and came to full term, then this was a challenge he wanted to have. And so many things have happened in his life to prove the wisdom of his choice. I mean, he said to me himself one time that he must have had a past lifetime where he was very arrogant, because this lifetime has been teaching him all about humility. And I was really stunned when he said that, and I see that we really have to trust the choices of other energy, because we have no idea what kind of journey they're on, what they're here to find, you know, what they hope to accomplish, what they hope to learn about themselves, what they hope to contribute while they're here. So we really have to trust, because we don't have the information to think otherwise.
Right. And I think that people do forget that coming in, because babies seem so helpless, and they are to a degree on a physical level, but we forget that they're so connected to spirit and that they really have way more answers in that moment than we do.
Yes, I mean, they come here. When you look into the baby's eyes, all you see is pure, sweet love, just complete unconditional love. And I believe that's like a great gift from God. It's showing us how God loves us, because this energy still believes it's God when it gets here. It knew it was before it got here, and when it first gets here, it still thinks it is. It still thinks it's love, you know, absolute and pure love. And so we're getting a good look at how God loves us as we look into the eyes of a newborn. And, you know, you can't resist newborn babies. Everybody wants to be around newborn babies, because they love you so unconditionally. They come here, they don't see anything about size, color, religion, background, politics, anything. All they see is this wonderful love in front of them, and they love everyone the same way. And they're just showing you how God loves you. It's a great gift in that way.
Right. Now, I, you know, when I really started to take note, I was reading through here, and I got to a point where you were talking about feeding the children. And I think that that's a big... That might be one of the first hurdles that we start trying to exercise our will over their free will. But you say that even young babies will know what they like.
You can't force an infant to eat more milk than it wants. If it doesn't want any more milk, it just falls asleep, and that's it. You can't do a thing. And it's about trusting that if you produce present a healthy diet in front of your children, healthy foods, and then let them choose, because they really know what they need and what they want, and they have taste buds just like we do. They know what they like and what they don't like, and they can choose for themselves in a healthy way. And it's really important to start those habits early, because if you don't, if you try to micromanage a child's life, if you're trying to do it with eating, you probably might be trying to do it in other areas. And when you do that, then they use the idea of eating as a way to get back at you, and it's not always in a healthy way. Because really, they are in control of what they eat, whether you like it or not. And so if they have to eat a certain way in front of you, they won't when they're not around you, and it's to show you that I am an independent being and I can choose what I want to eat. So it's really good to get those patterns started early. I remember in my own house, my mother, for some reason, my father hated rice pudding, so when my mother made it, he wouldn't eat it unless everyone else ate it. It was like this ridiculous issue that came up every time they had rice pudding, and I couldn't stand the rice pudding. And I remember a time I refused to eat it, and I sat at the table for 2 hours while everyone waited, and I couldn't leave the table till I ate the rice pudding. So I finally ate the rice pudding and then promptly went and vomited it all up. That was the last time. That wasn't the last time my mother forced me, but one of the last times that she tried to force me to eat what I didn't want. So for some reason, rice pudding didn't agree with me. And so it's about honoring that everybody has their individual body makeup, and they know what they need and what they don't need. And if you have healthy foods in front of them when they're young, they're most likely going to continue with healthy foods.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you make that distinction, because when I was reading the book, I just kind of had to chuckle, because I know some parents, and they're not necessarily young parents, who, you know, they're like, oh, well, my kids like this, and the foods are not necessarily healthy foods, and they're junk food eaters. But then I look at the way that they're eating, the parents are eating, and they eat a lot of junk food also.
Yes.
And their food choices are very limited. So I just kind of chuckled when I was reading this, thinking, wow, you know, I know that these people would probably really like to misconstrue that. But you're right. If they are given healthy choices,
yeah,
then they will continue to make healthy choices,
right,
especially when they need it. Not all the time. I know my family actually kind of rags on me a little bit about my daughter. My daughter likes to make healthy choices in her food. Not that she doesn't eat sugar, you know, and snacks and some junk food, but she'll choose healthy food over unhealthy food. And it kind of, they're like, oh, you just don't let her have good food. Well, yeah, I'm letting her have really good food. That's why she keeps choosing good food.
Yeah.
Good food's relevant here.
Yeah. Well, you know, also you can't expect with your thinking of your friends, you can't expect your children to have one diet and you have another, and to have your children respect you for that. I mean, they're going to say that, you know, what's going on here? You eat one kind of food and I'm supposed to eat another. You know, they don't think that's very reasonable. And it isn't reasonable, because children learn from what you do, not from what you say. So all they're learning from you know, you forcing them to eat different foods than you eat, is that they're not going to trust you in your decisions about other things.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I try to remember, too, whenever I'm trying to make, you know, my kids, or I've tried remembering this even with my older children, because my daughter is, there's a gap in between my older kids and my daughter, so there's a difference there. There's a lot of learning that happened,
yeah,
you know, as a parent, and I do things differently. But I remember when I was forced to eat liver at a friend's house, and I was there a lot, so that mother definitely felt like she had every right to try to make me eat liver, and she loved it, and I could not stand it. And I sat at that table for hours and hours and hours, and I never did eat the liver. I wound up throwing it in the trash can because she stopped diligently watching me, but I just, to this day, I can't stand liver, and it's just not my cup of tea.
Right, and you have a right to your likes and dislikes like everybody else.
Yep, and so when my husband went to feed my daughter liver, my initial reaction was, oh, no. Every time she eats liver, because she likes it, every time my kids eat liver, I have to remember to sit back and say, it's not your tongue. It's not,
right, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
It's not in your mouth.
Right.
So, yeah, it can work both ways, too.
Yeah.
Can work both ways. That's interesting. But yeah, that was I just kind of chuckled at that. Another point that stood out to me is I was thinking about letting, as they become teenagers, you talk about letting them make choices and you know, and just trusting that they're making the right choices. And I just wanted to bring up and have you maybe address, for myself, I know that, you know, like I said, I would have parented differently. In hindsight, there are definitely things I would have done differently that I would have just been, just allowed for more of the creative process and the universal wisdom that came from my children. What do you do when you get to a point, or what advice might you have for someone who's, they have teenagers and things are going awry, maybe they haven't created that autonomy, that self-confidence, and the child's making bad choices. How do you have any wisdom for how to self-correct from someone that might be starting there?
Yeah, well, first of all, this is all about responsibility, and the book talks about from the very beginning in allowing your children, as young as you possibly can, take responsibility for their actions. And so because when a child makes a decision or a teen makes a decision from an autonomous position, like if you say to the teenager, you know, first of all, stuff's out there. Drugs are out there. If a child wants to find it, they're going to find it, no matter what the parent says. So you need to be face-to-face with your child and say, I know the drugs are out there. I know that you're going to try them if you want to, and I can't stop you. But here's the deal. If you do try them and you bring consequences into this family because of it, then you'll have to take responsibility for those consequences. And when you put the choice into the child's hands and you say, you're the one who's responsible for the decision you make, the child is much more likely to make a responsible decision because they're the ones that are making it. But if they feel that their parents are trying to force them to do something against their will, in other words, they might rebel against the parents and then do drugs just to rebel, and then they get into trouble, they won't want to admit they're in trouble, because what they have to admit is that the parent was right and they were wrong. So the children don't want to do that. They want to be the one who's right and the parent is wrong. So if you make them responsible, that they are responsible for all the consequences that happen if they get into the drug scene, then they're going to say, well, wait a minute, if they do get into trouble, they're going to know it was because they got themselves into trouble. Their parents said, you know, it was up to me. And so from that position of autonomy, they can choose to stop in an honorable way and feel good about themselves and not feel that they've only done what their parents want them to do. Because this is the age where children are becoming adults and trying to become adults. So this isn't the time to criticize everything they do. This is the time to welcome them into adulthood. And it's a time to not to say they can't be individual if they want to, but to praise their individuality. It's the time to give them what you wish you'd been given as a child or a teenager, or the time to instill the idea that they're worthy the way they are, not that they need to be somebody else, that they need to be proved they aren't enough, all this negative stuff. That's not going to help anything.
Right. And you even said in the book, I mean, you're talking about even at a younger age, not necessarily the age of 18, about setting boundaries and saying that, you know, a child can't, you know, they would have to find someplace else to be if they're making certain choices.
Right, right. I mean, it sounds cruel. I think there's something out there called tough love that is very much like this, in that you need to, that if children become disruptive, you know, if you let children become disruptive within the unit of the whole family, then that disruptive behavior is going to increase. It's not going to diminish. So you have to, and within the home, and this also comes up in with step-parenting too, because people come into families, two families are trying to unite as one, and there's a lot of mishmash that goes on trying to find a cohesive unit. And so it's always about the well-being of the whole, of the well-being of the whole unit. And if there's somebody who's in that unit who's being disruptive in some way, then they have to understand that they aren't welcome to that whole being disruptive. And there's a phrase in the book, something about the fact that if you tell a child if they continue to be disruptive, they have to leave the unit, and how cruel it would be for a child to spend the night outside. But one night outside is nothing compared to a lifetime outside. And that's what happens if you let your child be disruptive continually within the family unit, because when they get disruptive outside of the family unit, then they go to jail. So you have to set the limits within the home that are healthy. The health of the whole is what matters. And it's no different on a small scale than it is on a big scale. The health of the whole is what's important in terms of this earth too, and it's important within the family, and it's important within any unit, any organization. The health of the whole must be considered, because if it is not, the whole begins to disintegrate. And this is what happens in families that, like, merge together, two families merging together after divorce and then coming together and remarrying. If the whole unit isn't considered, every person and participant contributing in a healthy way, the whole falls apart and it doesn't work. And I know this from personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a really important idea.
Now, in the whole unit, would you include to some degree at least the ex-spouse, the parent of the other parent of the children?
In terms of making the whole unit work?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you do that if there's, I was just wanting you to address, or maybe, I don't know if you've ever even thought of it, like, you've got a couple that's married, and each, or one of them at least, brings in children from another marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the other parent that's not a part of that marriage, but still part of that child's life. How does that blend? Do you address that, or did that get addressed a little bit of how that would blend in?
Yeah, I mean, I think the child's worst fear when divorce comes is that they're going to lose the love of someone they care about. So I think it's really important to allow them to have that love in their life, because that is what's going to make it easier if they have the love of all the people that care about them. So when you separate them and make, it's really about letting go of blame and not blaming anyone for a divorce, because really nobody is to blame. When you think about spirit, from spirit's point of view, spirit doesn't enter into a family without knowing what's going to happen, without knowing the challenges that lie ahead of it. So that child knows that the spirit of that child knows the challenge is coming and wants that challenge for one reason or another. So you have to trust that they're agreeable with the divorce happening, but that doesn't mean that because of your anger, you blame the ex, and then the ex somehow doesn't respond to the child because it feels unwelcome. So the child wants to continue that relationship, unless for some reason there's something happening in that relationship that is really unhealthy. It's really good to encourage it, because when you don't encourage it, you not only don't hurt your child, but you hurt the unit you're already in now, because you're full of negativity and you're saying that other people are wrong, and that's going to bring the wrong negative aspect into the new unit. So it's I didn't know these ideas, and I wish I had, but this is really what it's about. It's about making sure that the children don't suffer because you're angry at something, and if you let go of blame, you're teaching them that life is not, you know, we don't solve our problems by blaming other people.
Right, I agree. And you talk about that. It's woven throughout this book so beautifully. It's a core fiber of the book is just self-responsibility.
Yeah.
Just taking accountability for yourself. And not only teaching your children that, but really taking a look at yourself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's sort of been my journey. I really blamed everybody else, my parents and my ex-husbands, for everything that was wrong in my life. And it really got me to a point where I was almost a bag lady. So it was really a very bad attitude to have about life. But when I started taking responsibility, it was such a turnaround, because I realized that if I was responsible for the mess I was in, I could jolly well be responsible for something else, and I could create something else. It established a seat of power as being within me, and the first half of my life was always about being at the effect of other people and being the victim. And when I took responsibility, it was about creating an effect and being in a position of power. And so it's really crucial. And these ideas can start when you're really young. The child is just experimenting around the home, letting them, let them, when they start trying to do physical things they can't do, it isn't about saying you can't do this and you can't do that. It's about saying this is what you can do. And if they're trying to jump off a wall that's too tall for them, then set up a small wall where they can jump off it and find success. And they can, you know, you can tell them you don't. It isn't about something being wrong. It's about something being, you know, comfortable for your body. So let's try it on a low wall first, and then you can, then they experience what success is with an idea. And children will go for that big, in a big way, because they don't really want to try the tall wall anyway. They probably just want to do it because an older sibling did it.
Right, or yeah, there's something. I love that example when you gave that in the book. Because I was thinking about the children. I hear a lot of, you know, kids that are labeled with ADD and ADHD. They like to climb, and they'll climb like bookshelves and stuff. And their parents are constantly finding them, you know, up on something in the home. And so instead of saying you can't do this, give them an alternative.
Right.
Of something that's safe. Maybe give them, you know, something outside, or create something in the home that's safe for them to climb on. Get them a bunk bed, you know.
Yeah,
that,
exactly.
That kind of something that feeds that need for them to have that stimulation.
Yes. I mean, children come here as like just a bundle of curiosity. It's as if you and I were suddenly transported to a new planet in 5 seconds. I mean, we would be unbelievably curious about everything that was there, and that's what's happened to them. They've been transported to a new planet, and they're curious about everything, and they want to discover everything. And so it isn't about poo-pooing their curiosity. You don't want to kill the curiosity in a child. You want to feed it in a healthy way, and you want the child to be able to be responsible, to learn in a loving way, to learn with praise and not a lot of blaming. For instance, children, when they're very young, they run out into the street sometimes without thinking. And so it isn't about spanking them for running out in the street, because then that just shows them that you get punished for your curiosity. It's about showing them in a way that they understand why the road is not safe, and why it's not safe to run after a ball into the road where cars are coming by. And you can play that out with their toys and show them with cars and toys and blocks what happens when a child runs out in the street with the blocks. And they understand that. They understand that, and they realize that it's not about getting punished. It's about seeing that when they play ball, they need to be careful in the street. And it's you know, just doing it from a different way that honors the child's curiosity and doesn't make them suffer because they're excited and thrilled to be playing some game.
Now, and you're saying about punishment, do you feel like that there is a role for consequences to behaviors in parenting?
There are always consequences, yeah. I mean, if a child is making a decision to do something, then they should know there are consequences for doing it, good consequences and bad consequences. I mean, show them what happens from what they do. Let them, it isn't like... for instance, when they're in school and something happens to them and they're mean to somebody, it's not about excusing them as not being responsible for being mean to somebody. It's about showing them that when you're mean to someone, you get treated mean back in the same way. It's about learning about action reaction at a very young age. This comes up in the chapter about sharing. You have to show your children that sharing is profitable to share. So if they have a friend over and the friend wants a toy, give the toy to them and share the toy, and then the parent gives the child who shared 4 more toys to show them that this is how action reaction works. When you give something to somebody else, somebody gives something back to you, and if the child the child will enjoy this. I mean, they'll think, wow, I give something away and then I'm given 4 more things for it. If they get to school and they give a toy away and nobody gives them a toy back, and they come home and they say, well, I gave somebody, Johnny, a toy and nobody gave me a toy back at school, and so the theory doesn't work, then the parent can say, well, maybe you didn't get a toy back, but what nice thing did happen to you? Because you can be sure that the universe is always in perfect balance, and so if you are giving and sharing, you are receiving. It may not be exactly what you think what you're expecting to receive, but if something is received in a nice way, and then you can tell the child, well, he will think of something nice that happened. Somebody said something nice or gave him something else, and then you can explain that this is how the universe works. You know, whatever you give and however you share, people share with you. And this is an idea, and it also works the other way around. when they do something that is cruel to another or they mean to a child, then you have to explain to them that, well, now that you've put out that negative energy, don't be surprised when that negative energy comes back. Because if they're aware of the idea that this can happen, they're going to notice it when it does happen. It's only from ignorance that we think life isn't fair. When we realize that that life isn't meant to be fair in terms of the picture, because the picture is just this illusion, but life is fair emotionally. So if we are cruel or mean to someone else, we are going to get that cruelty back. And the child, as soon as the child is old enough to be cruel, the child is old enough to understand what happens when you are.
And you mentioned that a few times in the book, too, that when a child is ready to do something, they're ready to start understanding it.
Yes.
Like there's a level of understanding that comes with the behavior.
Right. Or they're asking a question. If they ask a question, they're ready to hear an answer. And they don't want to hear the answer. They don't want to hear the answer that the stork brought them, which is what I heard.
Yeah, I have to say that's one thing I've always talked to my kids. I've given them honest answers in languages that they could understand. I mean, certainly I didn't use words when they were younger that they weren't ready, that they couldn't understand. But I didn't candy coat anything. And that was one thing that I was really glad, because not only did it help them understand things, but what I found is they weren't hesitant to ask, and they trusted what I was telling them about stuff.
Right, right.
A little bit.
That's wonderful, because the first time you lie to your children know that you're lying. They can sense that you're lying, even if they aren't sure what the truth is. They can sense that you're lying, and then they aren't willing to trust your advice in the future because they aren't sure whether you're lying again.
Right. Yeah, and I have to say, you know, one thing, it kind of takes the burden off, too. Like when your child's asking you a question and you've answered them honestly, part of that honest answer could be, I don't know. And I love being able to not have to have that responsibility. If I don't know, I don't know. And, of course, now with the Internet, it's beautiful. I'm like, I don't know, but that would be a great thing for you to look up. Why don't we go check that out?
Yes. Then you show them that learning is a pleasurable endeavor.
Right.
Yeah.
That was one of my learning lessons as a parent, is I didn't have to have all the answers. And that took a lot of pressure off of me.
Yeah. Especially in these days when answers seem to be coming at a ferocious pace to all of us,
right,
about what's
exactly
going on and technology and everything.
I want to take a moment because I don't want to let the whole show go by without mentioning this. Betsy, they can reach you at your website, which is BetsyThompson.com. Is that correct?
Right, yes. And,
okay.
and they can order the books, my books from there, too.
Okay. Now, are your books available at Amazon or any place like that?
Yes. Well, Love Parent is available in all ebook formats. And you can order them from my website. And also, if you don't have an ebook, you can order it through PayPal from me.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I just wanted to make sure we got that information. Now, do you do any work with people individually, or are you just writing today, these days?
Mostly I'm just writing and promoting my book. I hope that I will be working individually and in groups eventually, but I have to trust that when it's timely, it will just happen. So I've been very busy with getting all the books that I self-published up on the Internet. This is the first one up, and I'm also in the process of writing my next book. So that seems to be what's taking my time now, and that's what it is. But you can reach me through my website. If you have questions, I'd welcome someone emailing me, and I'd be happy to respond.
Great. That's fantastic. Now, with the books that you get, I know that Walking Through Illusion was a question-answer book. You would ask a question, and you would basically receive the answer from Spirit. Are all of your books written that way? Was Love Parent very much written that way?
Well, it was, but it didn't end up in that format. But, yes, it was asked with that kind of question in my mind and then being answered. The four books that I self-published, gradually, as I, with each book after the one after the other, toward the end, toward the fourth book, there are a lot more questions in them. It was just a kind of a format that formed naturally for me, and so it just be turned into that. And the last two books that were published were in the question and answer format, and the next one's in question and answer format too.
Great. Yeah, that's a great way to write. Now, is there anything that you wanted to really talk about the book, or anything that you wanted to make sure you got the point across for people to understand here when you can actually discuss it?
Well, just from the point of view, I think this is the only book out there that writes about parenting from the spirit's point of view, about what spirit is thinking about before it gets here and why it's making its choices and how it wants to grow and expand or live the challenges that it didn't succeed with before, that it's coming from a place of complete autonomy when it plans the journey. And it plans everything from the color of its eyes to the shape of its toenails to the family it comes into to the attitudes it wants to greet when it gets here, everything, with the parents' consent, of course, with the soul of the parents' consent. And I always have this vision, I don't know if I mentioned it last time, of before you come into this game I call humanness, you're thinking about your next journey, and you're with all the people who are around you planning their journeys too, and you're all sort of doing this together, and I'm thinking, well, this is a challenge I need when I go back because I need to learn such and such, and then somebody else jumps in and said, oh, well, I'll give you that challenge because I need to learn such and such, and that would help me. And so you're planning your journey here, and you're planning it with people who you love and who love you, because who else would really care that you were going to progress, that you found the ideas you wanted to find, that you expand your soul. So these people are the people who are giving you your challenges are probably the people who love you the most. So this is what energy is thinking about before it comes here. You know, what do I need to expand my energy? What will help me once I get here to do that? And so it looks at parenting as not just something that's happening in the illusion or what we see, but something that has happened as a soul agreement between the parent and the child for the benefit of both, because the child has much to teach the parent and the parent has much to teach the child, and they are together to help each other become more fully realized.
I tell you, that has certainly been true for me. I've learned more from my kids than any place else on the planet, I believe.
Yeah, they do. They teach us a lot. And they're a great gift to us in that way, and we are a gift to them too, and because we are giving them the challenges that they want, and they give us the challenges that we need too. As you said, I'm sure your son has given you challenges that you need, and my son certainly has, and all my children have, teaching me to release and let go.
Right. Now, when I was reading the book, I was thinking of a situation where. It came up when you were talking about, I believe it was discipline, and in the book you talk about discipline as like where a child disciplines themselves. They put forth effort and they get reward from it, not as in terms of punishment, consequence, discipline. And I was thinking, my son played soccer, and he loved soccer, and he got on a team that he really enjoyed being on. And he wound up with a coach. This was after the team had become cohesive, and they were a winning team. They were doing a lot of stuff. He wound up with a coach that was good at soccer, but had some life philosophies that were not necessarily what I enjoyed. And I saw some things go on, like. There were just some consequences or some quirky things where I perceived my son as being punished. Not my son specifically, but the boys would get punished for something that maybe one had done. And they were trying to teach. I understand what he was trying to teach. He was trying to teach cohesiveness. But for a couple of years, actually, my husband and I struggled with, watching my son love being on this team, but his struggle with... He was like not jiving with the philosophy of the coach either. But he was taking it and starting to believe that it was, well, we deserve this because blah blah blah. So we decided that as long as he was loving the game, that we would just let him know we didn't necessarily agree with this philosophy, but that, you know, as long as he was loving playing the game, we would sit back. But we were really happy when my son decided, I don't want to be on this team anymore. I cannot agree. That was a hard thing for us to do, and I'm curious about your perspective of whether that was something that, you know, is that in alignment with that, or should, you know, should we have stepped up? It took longer than we would have liked for him to decide, and several times we thought we'd pull him from the team, but he eventually moved on.
I think you did a wonderful thing, because what you did was you gave him the responsibility himself, and so then he knew that he was doing it for himself and not for you. And that's really what's important, because that's like the stepping stone to being able to take responsibility for the things that come in the future, knowing that it's up to him. If he's uncomfortable in something, that he has to make the decision to get out of it. It's not up to other people to change. You know, it wasn't up to the coach to change to suit him. And if you had interfered, you would have taken this wonderful opportunity away from him to make that decision for himself. I think that's a wonderful story.
Well, I can tell you, it did not feel wonderful going through it. It was actually really hard.
Yeah, but look what we learned, and look what I'm sure he learned a lot, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he learned that something was more important than the sport. He learned that how you treat other people and the ideas you bring to them is much more important than what's happening around them. And I think that's an incredibly valuable lesson for a young person to learn.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that even years later now, my husband and I question whether we should have intervened.
No.
Because we've seen the consequences that came from that. Like, we've seen some lasting effects in his personality. And I'm sure it's part of his learning lesson, but that's one of the places where I guess you just have to step back and just trust that he learned what he needed.
Yeah, well, you can even ask him. I mean, if you can sit down sometime and say, well, tell me what you found that was valuable for making that decision, so that you can remind him that there was something valuable that he learned through that experience, and ask him what it is. Force him to contemplate what that might be. Because if you ask him in that way, you know, what is it that you learned about that was valuable in your life now, then he will see it in a different light. I mean, that's really what I had to do with my life, too, because I was really into blaming other people. So I had to ask myself, well, you know, with my mother, I had a really hard time getting along with my mother. She had a philosophy I didn't agree with. She had interests that didn't interest me. It was really an uncomfortable relationship for me, and because she tried so hard to force her opinions on me. But I learned that when I look back on it, that she was really a catalyst for me, in that she forced me to find what did work for me. She forced me to find a philosophy that did work and interest, and she forced me to find out what I did want to be like and what I did want to be able to do. And now that I look back on it now, I can say thank you, because really the challenge worked for me. It took a while to work, but it worked. And as I always hear from Spirit, it doesn't matter how long it takes you to get where you need to get, but only that you get there. And so, I'm grateful that I had the ability to look back and see that from a perspective and say, well, I did learn this and I did learn that, and I've been able to do that with my ex-marriages too, and say, well, what did I learn from being in that marriage? And when I really think about it from that, you know, how did I learn to stand up for myself or honor who I was? You know, all those things that you learn that make your life more enjoyable, when you realize that the person who challenged you that way was a gift in a way. And that's what I think, you know, happened before we got here when we're planning our journey. You know, my mother was saying, well, I'll give you that challenge, you know, and I hope you succeed, because she came here for her challenges, and if she wanted the same challenges that I wanted, she would have been a different person. She had different challenges. And so it wasn't about judging her challenges or judging what she needed to learn this lifetime. It was about asking myself what I needed to learn from knowing her, and what did I gain from knowing her. So ask your son, you know, what did you gain? What did you learn about yourself? What was valuable about that experience?
Okay. Yeah, I will do that. I'll definitely do that.
And let me know what happens, because I would love to hear what he says.
Well, I'm really curious because now he's an adult with a child of his own. So I would be curious to see if he ever looks back on that and sees, you know, what he learns, or if he ever even really thought about it. I'm sure occasionally it comes up, but maybe not as in as cognizant a way as it does for me, because it definitely surfaces. I mean, I do wonder, especially when I see him have a behavior that I recognize as something he developed during the time he was on that soccer team. And but I've never questioned him about it, so I will do that.
Yeah. I mean, you can say, I was talking to somebody on the radio the other day, and she was telling me about her experience, and you can relate to him what I was saying about being able to be grateful for the growth that this person had forced in my life. And then you can say, did that, you know, you don't even have to say, you know, what did you learn? You can say, did you learn anything? Did anything happen that was beneficial from that? And then let him go from there.
Okay, great. Now, I'm curious, as you were saying that you didn't believe in your mother's, or, you know, your mother had philosophies that, you know, just were not ones that you could adapt, that were not right for you. Did you have a child that maybe was that way, like your philosophies were not what your child's philosophies were, and it was really challenging?
Yeah, I had one child that is more, well, I think she's very psychic like I am, and so she's very determined to be her own person, her own whoever she is, and not like me, which is fine. I have been able to let go of that. I think probably my mother helped me with that too, because I was able to let go of her. I've been able to release the daughter and say, you know, not push my ideas on her at all and let her find her own way. I think that's really important. The children find their own way to be who they want to be. And as long as it isn't, you know, destructive to their health or anything like that, why would I? You know, I don't really know exactly what she's here to do. I know we all have challenges. My children have all had challenges. And I honor that, you know. They have to go through what they have to go through. And all you can really do is say, you know, you're here for them if they need you. That's all you can really do.
So is a time when they're being destructive to their own health, is that like the only time that you should really come in and maybe impose or correct or like influence?
I think so, because I think other times are usually more about the parent than the child. You know, like wanting to be polite at the dinner table and that kind of thing. And wanting to have manners. That's because it reflects back on the parent. But, you know, that's another time when it's really important to example what you want your children to be, because if you're telling your child at the dinner table that their manners are bad and they aren't eating right and they aren't eating the right foods, you're spending the whole meal criticizing them. They don't think that's polite behavior. So you have to demonstrate what you want them to be by how you are.
Right.
You can only demonstrate what you think is a good way to live and a happy way to live. If you aren't here as a happy person, you aren't teaching your children how to live happily. You're teaching them to, well, if you're unhappy because you're making sacrifices, you're sacrificing your happiness for another, you're being a martyr. That's what you're teaching your children to be.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I have to chuckle at that because my son wanted me to be more of a normal mother. He discovered early on, like in grade school, that I was not like other mothers.
Uh-huh.
So we spent a lot of his childhood with him wishing I was a quote-unquote normal mother and me just not being able to be normal in what his definition was. And I'm like, every time I attempt that, I become an unhappy person and you become really unhappy too.
Yeah.
You can only be who you're going to be.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You can only be who you're going to be. And actually, your being who you were regardless was teaching him that it's okay for him to be who he is regardless.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And, you know, during his lifetime, there was a lot of struggle in that because I was still, you know, young and impressionable. And, you know, it was important for me to try to fit in. And every time I tried, it didn't work. And, you know, I just had to go and be who I was so that I could be happy.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly came to that point, too, and especially with the writing. And when I first started doing the channeling, people thought, you know, it was just the weirdest thing in the world. And, you know, nobody was familiar with it, and it was a challenge. And I had to I mean, it wasn't until really a year ago that I completely came out of the closet about it, because even with the book that came before Walking Through Illusion, I was embarrassed to admit that I was channeling Jesus, and so I called Jesus Charlie in the book. So this book, when Walking came, Illusion came out, I said, no, this time I'm just going to be out there and just let the chips fall where they may. I'm just going to be who I am, and that's the way it's going to be. And everything has been much easier since then, running much smoother. I don't have anything to hide. I just say what the truth is. If people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we aren't here to please other people. We're here to please ourselves. We're here to demonstrate what living a happy life is all about, what living a happy life brings to us, the fulfillment we experience from being ourselves. That's what we're here to share, because that's really the true gift. So the fact that you are your true self with your son, that is the biggest gift of all.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure as his son gets older and starts to say, Dad, why do you do that? He'll be appreciating his mother a little bit more, too. So, there was one other thing that I wanted to bring up that was in the book, because we're getting down now closer to the time ending, but I really found this very... A very good example. You talk about allowance and chores, and how the two don't necessarily go hand in hand.
Right.
Can you address that a little bit?
Well, allowance and chores exist in harmony if the child sees himself as a part of the working whole. I think that chores are really important, because this is the family is a unit, and everybody needs to contribute to feel a worthy part of the whole. I mean, children who grow up helping out gain a sense of self-worth. They're making the unit work. They're part of the cog in the wheel that is making the unit work in harmony, and that's a great thing for children to learn early on, because they are going to go out into the world, and it's important for them to see themselves and their company as a part of the working whole that is making, they're a cog in the wheel that is making things work smoothly. And so it's a gift, I think, to give children chores to help them feel a part of the unit. And I think if they don't, but if they see themselves as slaves to parental whims, they're going to feel alienated. So you have to remember that the chores represent cooperation, and it's you are doing this because we're all working to make the family run more smoothly. And if they don't teach that, what are they supposed to teach? They don't teach discipline unless the child enjoys the task. They don't teach respect unless the child feels proud to contribute, and they don't teach participation unless you're working alongside them. And so that's, I think, a one thing. Now, allowance is something else, and there's a lot of... sometimes disharmony around allowance, because you have one opinion and your child has another, and then the parents don't always agree either on how much the child should have. And so sometimes I think I tried this in my family and it worked beautifully. I said, well, what allowance do you think is fair? And when the child is given the responsibility to choose the amount, they want to prove to you that they're responsible. So they come up with an amount that is probably better than you could have come up with, and that is fair.
Right. But allowance is not necessarily the reward for the chores that they're doing.
Right, right. Because if you make it a bargaining tool when they're young, it interprets into, I'll clean my room if you'll take me to the mall. And then later in life it becomes, I'll fix the closet if you give me sex. So chores are a natural part of the household working together. They aren't trade-offs for favors.
Right. Right. And, you know, I want to say that I work with a client and we work on parenting. And one of the things that I had a really challenging time getting her to understand was she wanted her teenage daughters to clean. And she wanted her house to be clean, but it was never cleaned and the teenage daughters wouldn't do it. And it took me a good 6 months to get her to understand that her daughters didn't do it or want to do it because they didn't see her do it. And her philosophy was, well, I already did it. I'm teaching them responsibility. And I'm like, well, let's look at this. So it took a while for her to understand it didn't work. So once she actually started getting up and doing it and doing it regularly, it was interesting how she would come back and report that her daughters were not necessarily cleaning what their quote-unquote chore was, but they would be cleaning something else. They would be like cleaning their room, or, you know, if one of them was supposed to clean the kitchen, they would go and clean the bathroom, you know.
Yeah.
But it took her actually getting involved. So
yeah.
Watching that dictatorship was huge.
Yes, yes. There has to be a payoff for the children, and even if the payoff is simply that I'm deciding to do this. You know, you aren't telling me to do it. I'm deciding to do it. I'm autonomous to make my own decisions. And you are demonstrating what you believe a member of a family should do to contribute. You're demonstrating that everybody participates. And they can accept that. What they can't accept is, you know, you're running their life. Because especially as teenagers, they're beginning to feel powerful. They're their own person. They want to be respected for who they are, honored for who they are, and so you need to give them you need to respect them and show them what you want back from them by giving to them what you want. I mean, it's all about that old action reaction, cause and effect, the law of attraction, whatever. You have to be the person you want your children to be, just like you have to be the person you want your friends to be. Because otherwise you aren't compatible.
Right, right. That's awesome. It's a really good way to do that. So, Betsy, we have about 3 minutes left. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you want to make sure we get across today?
Well, I just want to say also that Love Parent is not just for parents, because it's also about self-parenting. It comes down to the idea that whatever is good for the child is good for the adult. For instance, if children thrive on being told they're enough, they're lovable, and they're acceptable, then adults thrive on being told the same thing. And if children thrive on being told they can accomplish whatever they came here to accomplish, adults thrive on the same information. And if children thrive on being trusted to act wisely and on their own behalf, adults thrive on being told the same. And if children thrive on taking responsibility as soon as they're old enough to know the consequences of their actions, adults thrive on the same principle. Because theories that work well for one person work well for every person, regardless of age or circumstances. So you need to, you know, give your children the love you wish had been given to you, because then you give it to yourself.
I agree. And I have to say that this, you know, this book is a great point, starting point for self-reflection, if nothing else comes from it. Just looking at it and understanding, I know when I was reading through it, it definitely, I went back and I looked at my life and how I parented each of my children and how I was parented and how I even parented myself and how I take care of myself today. So it's a great book for self-reflection.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So I just want to remind you all that to get in touch with Betsy, you can go to www.betsythompson.com. You can also connect with her via my website, www.thehonoringhour. Her information is currently on the guest page. It'll be moved to the archives page. We hope that you will share this archive with other people. And Betsy, I want to thank you so very much for being on here. It's such a pleasure to have you, and I know that you've got other books that you're starting to republish, and I can't wait to read them, and I hope that you'll be willing to come back on and talk about each of those as well.
I certainly will. I would love to come back and talk about them. Thank you so much. I've had a wonderful time today. I always do when I come on. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much, and I'm looking forward. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for being here. I hope you'll join me again on the 29th when we have Nancy Ubel talking about mind walking, and we look forward to visiting with you then. Until then, have a great couple of weeks.